This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And today we continue our series on what makes a great fill in the blank. Last week we talked about athletes. Today we'll talk about what makes a great mayor. In many places, the mayor presides over the most immediate and most intimate level of politics. Potholes, teachers' salaries, crime rates, corruption, taxes, business and jobs, snow removal. Every once in a while, they also have to deal with disasters from earthquakes to 9/11. So what do you think makes a great mayor? Is it the person or the circumstances? Is greatness measured differently when we think of a small town or a big city mayor? Is a great mayor a visionary or a facilitator? This hour, we'll talk with former mayors, a brand new mayor, and we want to hear from you. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is the former mayor of New Orleans, Marc Morial. He's currently the president and CEO of the National Urban League, and he joins us from his office in New York City. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hey, good afternoon. Good to talk to you and good to be on Talk of the Nation.
Now, you were elected mayor in 1994. As you looked ahead to the job, did you have role models in mind, somebody who you thought of as a great mayor?
My father, who was mayor before me and who had been deceased by the time I got elected, was a role model. The late mayor of Atlanta, Maynard Jackson, was also a role model of mine because he was elected as a young man at 35. It's the same age I was when I was elected. And he was a role model as a pioneer and as a strong mayor. They were role models for me and people who I, to some extent, learned a lot from and modeled some of my work after.
How did the skills, you noted your dad was the mayor of New Orleans. How did the requirements for the job change from his time to yours, do you think?
Well, by the time I became mayor, the cities of America had gone through a substantial economic decline associated with the 1980s. The Reagan years cut many of the federal funds, which cities relied on in the 1960s and certainly the 1970s. Cities were therefore more self-reliant by the time the 90s rolled around. And I also think new problems like AIDS, homelessness, crack cocaine, and high murder rates and violence. When you very, very deep-seated problems that cities had to confront in the 1990s that were not as severe in the late 1970s, certainly in the early 1980s.
When you talk about, you mentioned strong mayor, and that had to refer to the system of government, where the mayor is the leading political figure as opposed to a city manager, which is the system in many other places. Do you think that the strong mayor system provides a scope for, you know, a mayor to really have a dramatic effect on his city?
There's no question in a strong mayor system where the buck stops, where the responsibility to lead lies. And in a strong mayor system, you probably have less bureaucratic finger-pointing, less buck-passing, less of the kinds of things that sometimes characterize gridlock in government. I would suggest that some cities where the culture has been to have a city manager form, it works very well. I think those cities, the older cities of America that have a history of strong mayors, particularly where they face diverse populations and diverse communities, the strong mayor form of government, I would argue, is a better form of government because it gives the mayor an opportunity to get in and focus on getting results, getting things done, because ultimately that's what you're judged by.
One of the reasons a lot of cities went to the city manager system years ago was the problem of corruption, the old Tammany Hall issue, and you still see it in some places. I mean, you get the example of, for example, a Buddy Cianci in Providence, Rhode Island, given enormous credit, a strong mayor, for reviving that city, rebuilding its downtown, giving it a new vision, also went to jail for corruption.
But, you know, I don't think the problem of corruption has anything to do with a strong mayor or weak mayor or city manager versus a non-city manager form of government. I think it involves the unique circumstances of the individual and the community and the circumstances of that particular corruption in that particular community. I would suggest that you've got great examples like Richard Daley out in Chicago, who's served with great distinction now for better than a decade. You've got other great examples of strong mayors. Ed Rendell, who served admirably in Philadelphia, Dennis Archer, who was mayor of Detroit, who were in strong mayor forms of government. Certainly Mayor Jackson and Andy Young down in Atlanta. Houston has a strong mayor form of government. Perhaps the strongest of the strongest systems is in Houston, where the mayor is not only the chief executive and his own city administrator and city manager, but also presides over and sets the agenda for the legislative branch of government, the Houston City Council. I think, you know, when I think about what it takes to be a great mayor, I think it takes a fine blend of vision and the ability to facilitate. Having all vision and no ability to execute or facilitate, you will not be a great mayor. Being simply a clerk of the works and a facilitator with no vision in terms of where you want to take your city will not make you a great mayor. I also think it takes great skills of communication. I think the better mayors, the more successful mayors, are also effective communicators, public communicators, private communicators. I also think it takes an extraordinarily tough hide, a tough skin. You will be criticized. You will be attacked. You must get used to, particularly in big cities, dealing with the media not just every once in a while, but every day, day in and day out. And you've got to get used to that. You've got to weather, I think, the storms. And I also believe that that surrounding yourself with talented people who share your vision and your mission is often an underlooked quality of an effective mayor, having a good police chief. I had a great police chief, Richard Pennington, who's now the superintendent in Atlanta, and together as a team, we were able to reduce corruption, reduce brutality, and bring down the crime rate, the violent crime rate, by some 60% over an eight-year period. Surrounding yourself with good, talented people is also, I think, a quality not often mentioned.
Is it a fun job? Is it interesting? Is it riveting? Or is it at the same time relentless and, you feel like you're being nipped at the heels by the media every day, among others?
I had a great time. I enjoyed almost every minute of it. There were days when you feel quite worn, where you feel quite beaten down. You're going to have those kinds of days. But generally, I thought it was a good time. It was an exciting job. And when you're working on behalf of the citizens of your own hometown, the communities that you grew up in, the people that you've known, it's a very, very special, close relationship with your constituents that I enjoy, and I think many, many people who serve in the office enjoy. I think the other thing is that the 1990s were an exciting time for cities. We had a very interesting group of mayors, from Willie Brown in San Francisco, who is retiring at the end of this year, Ed Rendell, who's now governor, Dennis Archer, Ron Kirk, to name a few, Buddy Cianci, who was a mayor, then Rudy Giuliani and David Dinkins in New York, Kurt Schmoke and Martin O'Malley in Baltimore, Lee Brown in Houston, Ron Kirk in Dallas, a whole host. Wellington Webb in Denver. I mean, I've had an opportunity to serve with a number of very extraordinary, immensely talented people who I think changed the face of America in the 1990s. Cities sort of turned around in the 1990s, turned the corner. Crime became lower. People began to return. There was new revitalization efforts. It was a time when we had the benefit of having President Bill Clinton in office, and he was had an open ear, a dialogue, and a great sensitivity to American cities. And I think that his role was extremely helpful to what all of us tried to do as leaders. So it's a fun job, but it's a tough job. It may be like proverbially playing quarterback in the NFL. People see the touchdown pass, but they don't see you being sacked. And they don't see you being knocked down after you get the pass off. So it's a tough job.
Marc Morial, thanks very much for being
thanks
with us.
Thanks for having me.
Marc Morial, former mayor of New Orleans, currently president and CEO of the National Urban League, and he joined us from his office in New York City. And with us now from Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta, Georgia, is Otis White, president of Civic Strategies Incorporated, a nonpartisan public policy consulting firm, a columnist for Governing Magazine and Governing.com, and he'll be with us throughout our discussion of what makes a great mayor. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I wondered what you made of former Mayor Morial's description of the job.
Well, he's quite a scholar of mayors, and he came up with a longer list than I did of good mayors. He's absolutely right. The 1990s were maybe the high water mark for mayors in American history. They had the most talented group of mayors perhaps ever in American history, and it was an exciting time to be a mayor. We'll see what this new decade brings for us, but that was a great decade. Things changed in cities from the time of his father until he was in office. Part of it was that there was a great demand for legitimacy and responsiveness of city government, which made it the job tougher. And also cities realized from, I guess, the 70s on that they couldn't do it by themselves. They needed investments. They needed citizens to participate. So there was a change, and that's one of the reasons a strong mayor form of government has come back into style from the old council manager form of government that so many reformers wanted back in the first half of the 20th century.
We want to get listeners involved as well. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, or email us TOTN@npr.org. What makes a great mayor? Keith in Aberdeen, South Dakota, what makes a great mayor?
Pretty much what you've said. I was the executive assistant of the mayor of Hartford for 2 years in 79-81. That was a council manager form of government, and what it amounted to, because of the problems in the city, the deputy mayor was actually the most powerful person in the on the council, and he sort of ran things for the city. However, the mayor was always out with the people, and that's what got him reelected, and got a lot of his opponents unelected.
And what was his name?
George Atherton. He has since died.
Mm-hmm. And what particular quality do you think made him great?
He was always one of the people. He was a clown, but he could be very serious, and he had a heart on his sleeve. It was he was one who would always talk about. If his idol, the man he tried to model himself after, was Fiorello LaGuardia.
And Otis White, that is a name you rapidly run into when you hear about great mayors.
You know, your caller has just brought up a great sort of satellite for being a good mayor. It's very helpful if you pass the character test. And the character test is, it's helpful if you are a character. And Fiorello LaGuardia was a character.
Ed Koch was a character. Believe me, he was a character.
Ed Koch, Hamadouin, was a character.
The highlight that was, in fact, pointed out in a cartoon when he died. At one time, Hartford and this East Hartford had a dispute over where the boundary was because the Connecticut River runs right down the sides of both of them. So George did it. George Washington got on a boat and went across and planted a flag on the sands of East Hartford and said, it's ours.
Keith, thanks very much for the call and the remembrance.
Sure. Have a good day.
You too. We're talking about what makes a great mayor, and we'll take more of your calls after we come back from a short break. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can send us email. The address is TOTN@npr.org. When we come back, we'll also be speaking with another former mayor and a current mayor. So what do you think the character test ought to be for a mayor, and what do you think ought to be the system, strong mayor or city manager and city council? I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about that elusive quality greatness and what makes a great mayor. Of course, you're invited to join the discussion. Are you a superior mayor or do you live in a town with one? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or you can email us at totn@npr.org. Our guest is Otis White, president of Civic Strategies Incorporated in Atlanta, Georgia, a public policy consulting firm at the local level, also a columnist for Governing Magazine and Governing.com. And joining us now from his office here in Washington is Steve Bartlett. He's former mayor of Dallas. He served from 1991 to 1995 as a Republican, currently president and CEO of the Financial Services Roundtable here in Washington. And good of you to join us today.
Neil and Otis, it's good to be with you.
And if you were mayor of Dallas today, how different would the challenges be that you faced from your time to now?
Well, I think not that dissimilar. The challenges are of a big city, of a central city, are typically the same. You have to really maintain and push and put your pedal to the metal on crime and make sure that crime does not become a problem for citizens. You have to keep a pro-business climate, and you have to keep strong ethics, and you have to keep the infrastructure going. So central city problems that were there in the 80s and 90s are still with us. Some cities make progress, and others kind of don't.
Now, you were Dallas when you were mayor, had a city manager type of situation. Of course, you were the elected mayor. But did you feel that that restricted your abilities to bring your vision, your ideas to the fore?
No, it actually doesn't. There's always a lot of conversation about that. But I think the test is that the mayor is called on to make whatever system work he's presented to by the charter. And Dallas has a strong a council manager form of government. We do have a system that strengthens the mayor just as I came in several ways, provided a four-year term, the ability to appoint committee chairs and boards and commissions chairs and such as that. And probably most important, at least in Dallas's case, was we added to the mayor the right and indeed the responsibility to set the agenda, to set the mission, to formally set out before the city and the city council the agenda to act on. And that's a major power that, in fact, when you use it properly, it helps a lot.
Now, you served in Congress before you were elected mayor.
Right.
What are the different political skills needed for each job?
Well, it's entirely different. Well, not entirely different. The similarities include a commitment to ethics and a good set of values. A good sense of humor always helps, the ability to kind of keep your head about you when all else are losing theirs. As far as political skills, though, they're two different kind of jobs. And mayor or any chief executive officer, a political position, you lead the way, you set the vision, you set the direction for the city, and you do it in clear, unmistakable mission-setting kind of statements so that the rest of the city then wants to go and achieve that. Whereas in Congress, you persuade, you legislate, you write a bill, you compromise the bill, you amend the bill, and you work for 4 years or so, and then maybe you pass it, and maybe you don't. Maybe you go into something else. In the mayor world, things are in real time. If you propose something on day one, within about 6 weeks, you know whether you're going to achieve it or you know whether it's time to abandon it and start something else. In Congress, gosh, you can't even get your newsletter out in 6 weeks.
and knowing when to cut your losses as mayor, that's an important thing to know.
You do have to know when you cut your losses, and probably as important as you know, you have to know how to limit your agenda to the big stuff, whereas in Congress you end up trying to catch everything that comes your way. As mayor, the successful mayors are, among other things, the ones that set an agenda of two or three or no more than four big, bold ideas, and then challenge the city, all the elements of the city, the publics of the city, to achieve those goals. We when I came on, I had three, but the big one and the first one was to reduce the actual numbers of violent crimes within a year. Nobody thought it could be done. Nobody thought it could be done except for me and my wife, and sometimes my wife was curious. But once you set the agenda and set that tone, then everybody in the city set out to try to achieve the goal, because that then became the goal of the city. And we achieved it in the first 5 months, actually. We had our first reduction of violent crime in some 20 years in the city of Dallas by month five.
Steve Bartlett, thanks very much.
All right, thanks.
Former mayor of Dallas, Texas, Steve Bartlett, currently president and CEO of Financial Services Roundtable. He was with us from his office here in Washington. And Otis White, focusing on a couple of things, that's very important, isn't it?
It is. There is a former mayor of Orlando, Bill Frederick, who used to say, look, people are only going to remember you for two or three things, so you might as well concentrate on two or three things. The other thing that the mayor alluded to, which is very important, the power of any mayor, whether he's a strong mayor or a weak mayor, is the ability to get attention. Mm-hmm. And good mayors know how to use that attention.
Let's go to Kay, who's on the line with us from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Hello. Yes, I was listening to the show, and you were asking what makes what are the good qualities of a mayor. Well, our mayor from North Pole is Jeff Jacobson, and he is a great communicator. And he's the mayor of the town next to us, but he has a weekly radio show, and he puts his own time into it. And he's just promotes the community, and he roots out the small-time corruption, and he's always after people who are trying to set up their own business illegally, such as drugs. He's always after them. And I just thought I'd field that comment.
Thanks very much for the call, Kay.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And again, that goes back to, I guess, Fiorella LaGuardia, who was famous for reading the funny papers in New York City on the radio during a newspaper strike.
Yeah, that's what everyone remembers about. He wore funny hats. He was also a great mayor. He knew what LaGuardia's true talent was getting money out of the federal government. And he was a Republican, which was sort of funny during the Depression, but he knew how to wring money out of the federal government. And to a certain extent, he was convenient for Roosevelt to use. But mayors who are good at shaking the money tree at higher levels of government are very often successful.
Let's go to William, and William's with us from Las Vegas, Nevada.
I want to state that as far as the character goes, Las Vegas has the biggest character mayor you could have, Oscar Goodman.
former mob lawyer. So. How many cities can boast a former mob lawyer as their mayor? But he's quite a character.
He's the best. When the NFL threw in our ads, he was willing to go to bat for them. He's even willing to speak his own mind. When they said possibly putting prostitution in Las Vegas, he said, well, I'll at least consider it.
William, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil.
Here's an email we got from Susan Duquette in Virginia Beach. My mother recently retired after her second term as the first female mayor of Shaker Heights, Ohio. Patricia S. Mearns was 19 with no college education when she married my father, who at the time was stationed overseas. They're the proud parents of 9 children. My mother managed the house and the children, was never employed outside the home. However, in her early 60s, she became involved in the city council. After that, she was convinced to run for mayor by her many supporters, friends, and family. It was a risk with no formal education or business experience. My mother campaigned on her innate intelligence, her personal experiences, and the strength of the skills that she developed as a mother and a grandmother. She listened to the little people, not always the financial or political voices. Her city, Shaker, renovated city buildings as demographics changed, built a family center and a closed school, and made the job a full-time position with my mother's leadership. Obviously, that was Shaker Heights in Ohio. And Otis White, you know, you'd think you need a lot of, academic skills or professional experience. Not true sometimes.
No. Interesting enough, I just recently met the mayor of Shaker Heights, and she's a woman and a lawyer. So maybe there's a great tradition. Perhaps this listener's mother set the tradition of strong female leadership in Shaker Heights. But no, there is no school to go to become a great mayor. Some mayors are notoriously inarticulate. They may communicate, but it's in a language that people from outside the city can't understand. But no, there's no model. There are a set of skills that good mayors and great mayors have, but they don't come out of a factory.
Joining us now is Mayor John Hickenlooper of Denver, Colorado, elected in July of this year. His first elected position, his previous career, has included geologist and brewpub founder. And Mayor Hickenlooper, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Great to be here, Neil.
As we mentioned, you had no political previous experience. What made you decide to run for mayor of Denver?
Like many small business owners, I was frustrated by all the partisan bickering and battling between the city and the state. We obviously are a large city, but we have a large metro area around us, and we've been growing a lot in the last 10 years, and there didn't seem to be the cooperation that, you know, in the private sector you see every day. So I basically was involved in a battle over whether we should sell our naming rights several years ago, and after we reached a successful compromise, a number of I thought, pretty smart people suggested that I ought to consider running for mayor.
Well, when you considered running, I understand you met with a lot of mayors of other cities and former mayors. What did you ask?
Well, I asked them whether they could really felt they could make a difference. What was it worth the personal sacrifice? You know, I tried to find what were the fresh ideas out there that might work in Denver.
Well, what's been the biggest surprise in your first 3 months as mayor?
You know, I think the biggest surprise is the fact that I like it so much. I knew I'd love the campaign, but I thought that being mayor would be something that was important and worthwhile, but that wouldn't be very rewarding. And yet you meet every day the most passionate, committed people from, you know, every corner, every crack of the city. And it just has been tremendous. For me, my quality of life has expanded dramatically.
Now, you've been having a run of great success. You've negotiated a couple of important business deals with Frontier and United Airlines and had some other surprising successes, or surprising at least to some of your newspaper critics. At this moment, I guess nobody really hates you yet.
Right. I think they call it the honeymoon.
Yeah, but you know that something bad is coming, right?
Yes, I'm sure that they will. At some point or another, I'll be faced with a difficult decision that will, you know, alienate close to half the city. And, you know, that comes with the territory. You just got to make sure, you know, that your core values are intact, and that you don't get pilloried over something you don't really believe in.
We were talking earlier about the importance of focus. Are there one or two or three things that you would hope to be remembered for as mayor of Denver, Colorado?
Well, I think that certainly regionalism and that sense of cooperation that reaches beyond political barriers, so that, you know, a city like Denver, every time our economy begins to grow, people want to live here, there are a bunch of people put up red flags and say, no more growth. But any city should strive to have economic growth, or your children can't come back and have a better job than you had, which I think is pretty much every parent's dream. So I think we have to have a transit system and regional cooperation so that we make sure we have enough water, that we really ensure that we don't dilute our quality of life when the next wave of economic growth begins. So the regionalism, I'd also like to be known for, as a mayor who, even though we have a separate school system, championed the idea that educating our kids from early childhood education through all levels of university, I mean, that's everyone's responsibility. It's not just the school district. It's not just the Board of Regents of the university system. It's got to have, everyone's got to buy into that. And I think that's something that's, you know, been long overdue. And I'd also like to, you know, 4 years from now, I'd like people to look at Denver and say, just from a mechanical perspective of how we deliver services, I'd like Denver to be the best run city in America, where when you get a building permit or you're trying to expand your business, you are dealt with in a professional, fair way, and everything is moves as quickly as possible, which, as most people know, is not always the case with local government.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And can you take a call with us?
Sure.
Let's speak with Daniel, and Daniel's on the line with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
There's one thing that y'all have actually kind of started touching on that you hear on a lot of these shows nowadays, but nobody really brings up. And that's, how do you actually start running for office? I'm 21, and I'm going to school right now with the intention that later on I plan on running for Senate or for governor, but there isn't like a campaigning 101 class offered in school, and there's no real education on this. So how does one start to go about making a run for an office?
I'll take a stab at that. My advice, and again, I'm a little bit eccentric. I'm 51 and never ran for any office, for class president, for dog catcher up until last year. I think the best thing you can do is get out in the world and try and do things that you're passionate about and learn the lessons of life. I think one of the problems is that you have too many people in government that don't have enough outside world experience. And, you know, I'm not a big critic of public servants, but I think when you're always looking at how to balance what the polls say and, you know, how can I say something that doesn't get me into trouble, you often lose touch with what some of your core values are, and you don't take a strong enough stand on things that really need that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if you go out, work in business or work for the nonprofit world, get out there and get as many life experiences, and then wait, you know, wait till you're in your 30s or early 40s, and if you stay involved, you know, for me, I served on probably 40 nonprofit boards and committees over the last 10 or 12 years, and I got to know so many people in the community that when I decided to run for office, people knew that when I said I'd do something, I did it, and that I didn't, you know, shoot my mouth off without carefully considering different perspectives. And, you know, I got very strong support from many different groups of people. I didn't have a natural constituency like some people do, but, you know, build those relationships. And that's really, I mean, that's the heart of any political campaign is your kind of local grassroots support.
Daniel, you may not also want to count on earning a lot of money.
Well, I mean, that's not why I wanted to get into politics. My great-granddad actually did run for Senate in North Carolina, but that was long before I was born. He passed on before I was born, so I couldn't really go to him for advice. My big thing is, you know, I see things going on, and I see people, many people, dissatisfied with the way that government is run, and I want to go in and be somebody who the nation can be proud of, that this person is making decisions based on the rationale that we're looking for.
Well, Daniel, good luck to you.
Great. Thank you very much.
You might also want to consider, by the way, volunteering in somebody else's campaign to learn a little bit about the mechanics. That might be helpful as well.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay. Daniel with us from Raleigh, North Carolina. And Mayor Hickenlooper, we just have about a minute or so left, but I wonder, you know, how do you compare being mayor to running your brew pub?
Well, you know, I love the restaurant business. And, you know, when I was running the Wine Coop Brewing Company, it was some of the, I can say, the happiest, greatest years of my life. And I thought for 15 years, you know, running a popular restaurant was the best job in the city. And now I know it was the second best job. You know, if you're one of those people, and I think a lot of the people that listen to your radio show are that kind of person or those kind of people that they have that genetic deficiency, or actually it's an extra gene where they want to make the world better. They want to contribute. They want to give back. Being mayor of in a strong mayor city like Denver is the most rewarding experience I could ever imagine. I love it.
John Hickenlooper, we'll probably call you back once the brickbats start falling.
Thanks.
John Hickenlooper is the mayor of Denver, Colorado, and he joined us from his city in this afternoon. We're going to take more of your calls about what makes a great mayor when we come back from a break. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Also, you can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. We're also going to be talking about why the dollar's value fluctuates. Mark Zandi from the economy.com will be telling us everything he knows about the fluctuation of currency rates, why they go up and down, who wins and who loses. So stay tuned for that. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And today we're talking about how mayors rise to greatness, and you can join the conversation, 800-989-8255, or email us, totn@npr.org. Our guest is Otis White, president of Civic Strategies Incorporated in Atlanta. And I wanted to read you an email, Otis White. This is from Heather Rosa. As the mayor of one of Minnesota's smallest cities, Schaefer, population perhaps 500, but growing rapidly, and finishing my fifth year in the position, I've given your question a lot of thought. Before one can aspire to greatness, one must grow into competence. One must know the city, its history, people, land, buildings, public spaces, and ordinances. One must be able to communicate clearly, understanding that the most important part of that skill is listening. One must be comfortable with authority, able to exercise it when appropriate, and to follow others when that is appropriate. Beyond simple competence, one must love the job and love it for what it is. To be great, you must finally have vision, seeing where your community must go to become its very best, and bring all the rest of your skills and talent to bear to lead your community to that place. And again, that from Mayor Heather Rosa. And what do you think of that summary?
Yeah, I think it describes why there are so few great mayors. It is a tough, tough job. And she's absolutely right. You got to be a politician. You got to be a cheerleader. You got to be a salesperson, a deal maker, a manager of city services, and you have to have, and this is what I think she's touching on, a real instinct for what makes cities tick, just your city in general, but also all cities around the country. What makes a great city? And that's why there are so few great mayors.
Knowing what your city is about is crucial, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, and I like what Mayor Hickenlooper said, which is there is a different route to being a mayor than there is to being a governor, for instance. And this is not always true, but it's true enough. People like their mayor to have made a mark in their community before they run for office. That's why it's not that unusual for a 50-year-old man or 50-year-old woman to run for mayor and be elected in a big city like Denver. Look at Michael Bloomberg. He made his mark in the world of business before being elected mayor of New York. Dick Reardon, the former mayor of Los Angeles, the same thing. These are two people who went straight into the mayoralty of big cities without ever having run for political office before. And I think because at the city level, people like folks to have some real-life experiences and have absorbed what this community is about. It's also one of the reasons that these people rarely go on to higher office. They don't tend to be elected governor or to the Senate, because they usually are so much a part of their community that people in the rest of the state feel like they can never be a good representative for them.
Let's go to James, and James is with us from Tallahassee, Florida.
Hello. Thanks Hi. For taking my call.
Sure.
I've worked as a city planner at local governments. I've done city planning for about 16 years, and I've worked at local governments where there's a strong mayor form of government and also the council manager form of government. And I think I just kind of wanted to give my comments on the way they seem to work from a staff person's position. When I worked as a staff planner at the strong mayor of local government, I was just a staff planner, but it seemed good because the planning director, I knew who his boss was. And this, as far as having a number of bosses, it seemed to work pretty well. The council manager form of government seems to work very well, too. But oftentimes, and I worked as a planning director and at that level of a city, and it seemed oftentimes I had many bosses because the administration and policy seemed to bleed over a lot of times with the elected officials.
Hmm.
If
you were going to run, which system would you rather run for mayor in?
Both take a lot of grief when you're, I don't know, I think I personally working in local governments wouldn't want to run for any of those positions. But it's a hard job, and I think one thing as a planner that I like in a mayor is one that can see the big picture on land use decisions and doesn't make those decisions based on who can bring the most in the council room and scream them loudest.
Well, thanks, James, very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Bye.
Otis White, I wanted to get to, we were speaking earlier with different mayors from different political parties. Is there an ideology of Republicans and Democrats? Do they run cities differently?
They're starting to, and it's kind of interesting, and it isn't breakdown exactly on ideology, but there is a sort of Republican approach that is gaining some currency. There's a mayor of Indianapolis, Stephen Goldsmith, who began a new approach to government that's sort of a Republican approach, which was something he called managed competition. And it's not exactly outsourcing. It's not that you give over the sanitation department to a private company, but it's usually breaking up the sanitation department into a number of competing units, some of which are public, some of which are run by private interest, and you use the competition to drive down costs and drive up the quality of service. It's a Republican idea. It's really catching on around in governments, but Democrats are embracing it as well. And you know, there used to be a saying that there is no Democrat or Republican way to pick up the garbage, And I think this mayor showed that maybe there is a Republican way to pick up the garbage.
Here's an email we got from Tim Lowe. Growing up in the 60s and bearing witness to the Chicago Democratic Convention, it isn't easy for me to say anything nice about a Daley. But as a longtime Chicago area resident, I'd nominate Richie Daley for mayor of the century. Chicago has blossomed into one of the greatest cities in the planet under his rather strange and inarticulate administration. Go Richie.
I have to echo that. He is a great, great mayor. Far, I think, hands down, his father was a great mayor, but he is by far a greater mayor. And the reason is he seems to have, in his own inarticulate way, a real feel for Chicago and a real feel for what makes cities work. And he has an eye for the detail that almost any mayor anywhere in the country cannot duplicate. He sees where the flowers ought to be planted on the side of the roads, and he makes sure they get planted there.
Let's go to Ken, and Ken's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to call up and talk about a great mayor that we had here called Bud Clark, and he was just another one of those brew pub owners that came out, and it just seemed like he was so much more in touch with the everyday person, and you know, you could talk to him. You'd see him on the street, walk up, and he was like, just stick his hand out, and it wasn't, you know, excuse me for this, but it wasn't political. It was like he was happy to see you, talk to you. And it just seemed like the city was more in touch with him. Our mayor that we have now, and which will go unmentioned, it just seems like it's just all glamour and get on the camera, and you can't, we have, I've tried to talk to him myself on certain things, and it's like just totally inaccessible. It's just different as night and day.
So Otis White, maybe the best qualification to be a great mayor is to run a bar.
Well, you know, that used to be a traditional route into politics back in the 19th century. Bar owners were frequently courted by politicians because they had a number of voters who came in every night. If they spoke well of the politician, it helped. So particularly in Chicago, the route to a political office often went through the other side of that bar. So, and you know, the caller sort of puts his finger on why the character test, that is, it's helpful if your character helps, because sometimes mayors are going to have to sell things that people don't like. And if they can, if the voter can say, you know, I really think what Mayor Smith wants to do is awful, but, you know, I really like her. I think she's a character. That'll help some.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that was a really big thing. He always felt like Mayor Clark was, you know, he was just one of you. So he was looking out for you. It wasn't any kind of staging or anything. If he had an idea, he seemed to be very sincere with, he thinks this will work. He thinks this will help. And a lot of things that he did do since he's gone, myself and a lot of us miss him. We miss him bad.
Ken, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Can I jump in here, Neil, for a second? This is Michael Bloomberg's problem in New York. He is going to be one of the great one-term mayors of all time. That is to say, he's truly addressing some tough, tough things in New York and doing the right thing. Problem is, he is not a character. The people do not like him. They think he's aloof, uncommunicative, and he probably will not get reelected for that reason.
Well, Otis White, thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure. My pleasure.
Otis White, president of Civic Strategies in Atlanta, a columnist for Governing Magazine, and he was with us from the studios of Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta.